It's Jeremy White and Joe DiBiase.
I did have the wonder in my mind, did I have more fun with the Bills during the drought?
You serious?
Get out.
The drought,
get out.
Look
Leave.
Back
go
at the
home,
drought.
Go home.
The drought was fun.
You're dismissed. It's very fun to watch the Bills lose to Cleveland 6-3.
I mean, is
that
this...
That was really fun. It was really fun to watch Doug Marrone punt in Miami down 10 points with 6 minutes left. These were all very fun things.
You're listening to Jeremy and Joe on the home of the Bills. WGR Sports Radio 550.
Friday morning. How are we all feeling?
Whew.
Glad we're all sitting down?
Very glad that I am sitting down right now. That is for sure.
That stair climb was probably...
Oh, I really considered the elevator. I thought about the
one,
elevator.
The one floor elevator?
The whole ride here, I thought about the elevator. I'm not even kidding.
Yeah.
I was like, am I going to be able to get up the stairs? I don't know.
Did you walk in with Josh? This morning?
We did.
Yep, we did.
I heard Owen
audibly groan as he got out of his car.
Wasn't there, would you have taken the elevator?
Shamefully, 100%.
And just not tell people?
100%. I'm being totally honest with you guys and everyone out there, I would have taken the elevator if I got there before Josh.
So we had our 11-day power play game last night. 6-9 was the time slot. And, 3-hour hockey game. Owen playing, I mean, you had laced up the pads a couple times right before in preparation.
Yeah, I had a couple of preparatory skates, but nothing, you know, obviously 3 hours long. That was tough.
Yeah, a lot of stamina needed for last night's game. It was pretty competitive throughout also. Like, usually I feel like those things slow down on pace. Nearing the end, I never felt like that happened.
Yeah, there was always some juice to the game. There were a couple of net front scrums where I had guys on defense come and yell at people in front of me. It was a good game. It was a good game the whole way.
Yeah.
Owen got player of the game, too.
And Owen got player of the game, well-deserved.
Hockey Night in Canada 11-day towel. Very excited about that.
Nice.
Very good.
That's very cool. I like that.
You know, couldn't have done it without the guys in front of me.
Yeah, well, look at that. That's some goalie locker room press conference talk, right? He's well-trained.
Yeah, well, I had my years. I did my time.
There were a couple of kids on the other team that, like, they could rip it.
Yeah, there was a junior Sabres kid that was scooting around out there every time he was out there. I knew as soon as he jumped over the boards, I was like, all right, I'm going to have to do stuff for this whole shift now. This is going to make me tired.
That first shift he had, too, in the first hour, I was just like, oh. All right. I was sitting there on the bench watching. It's like, okay, that guy's fast.
Yeah.
A lot faster than me.
Yeah, I was very happy when we were not out there against that line. My line, at least. 11-day power play, by the way, does continue. Thanks to everybody who donated and showed up yesterday. You can still donate, and there are still games going on, of course. 11daypowerplay.com. You can search the team. You can search individual players.
So I play again tonight.
And Josh plays again tonight.
Going to
that's the
tonight,
crazy.
9 to midnight.
Have fun, dude.
My legs are not ready.
Yeah. Well, now listen. Josh will no longer be able to criticize any player who plays poorly on the second of a back-to-back in the NHL, because he will now know what it feels like to play. Well, a 3-hour game, but you know the pace of the NHL might as well be a 5-hour game in comparison. That you know. Today, you're going to have to do it tonight, probably feeling like super sore. And if you don't play well, you're going to have to remember that.
Yeah, I never actually thought about it that way.
Step up to the podium and answer the questions, Josh. Are you out of shape?
We didn't get pucks in deep, and just got to get more pucks on net.
Because, you know, in hockey, you really don't ever hear them use the excuse of the back-to-back.
Not the players.
Not often. Not the players.
Maybe it's rare.
The coaches maybe will mention it.
Coaches do it pretty regularly to try and give their guys an out a lot. I know
that's
this.
Right.
But players, I think we saw Toronto complain a little bit about it this year because they had a stretch early in this calendar year in January, February, where they played a game essentially every other night for a month, and it was like 70% road games. It was really tough.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are definitely times where the NHL will take the advantage, I don't know, of their players and make them play a pretty crazy schedule. And you'll hear it then a little bit. But for the most part, you don't hear guys make many excuses, period, in the NHL, to be fair.
No, that's
like the players themselves.
That's right. So we got the win, and by the way, I do think I was looking for this right now. I'd read an article a couple months ago about, like, there were numbers put on how teams perform in that second of a back-to-back, and it makes a bigger difference than you think.
Oh, it's a major factor.
It's like an 8-9% change in win percentage for the average team in that second game in the NHL.
What's the percentage change when a player plays as a skater the one game and a goalie the next game?
Well, that's the other thing Josh is doing, right? Josh is playing goalie tonight after playing on the ice last night.
I caddied 18 for Jeremy yesterday. And
that is
true.
That's right.
That is true. That was probably a nice little warm-up, though, right?
That was kind of my thought process. I wanted to go, you know, get the legs loose, walk 18, no swings, so you're not torquing your back around. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the back-to-back thing, if you've never done it, if you've never played two, like, full 60-minute competitive hockey games in 2 days consecutively, you feel it. Playing in junior, all you do is play back-to-back. You play Friday, you play Saturday. Sometimes you play 3-3. You play Friday, Saturday, Sunday if you're on a long road trip. Those are brutal.
Yep.
It's a little more even playing field because the other team's doing it. You're playing series against other team most of the time. So they're whatever game you played, they played. But it's amazing. You talk about it after the game. It's one of the last things coach says to you after the game. Like, get your ice baths, do all your recovery. Like, it's a big deal. And a lot of guys, you may be in shape, but you might not be back-to-back in shape. And that's there's a big gap there. And I think it matters a lot for, especially at that level in the NHL where you're playing at maximum capacity like that. It really changes a lot. And I think you even see some teams make purposeful stylistic shifts in the front end and the back end of a back-to-back. You see goalies play strategic games, all that stuff. It's a big deal.
Sure. So that's going on, continuing into the weekend and into next week for the 11-day power play. And as Owen mentioned there, it's Jeremy and Joe. Jeremy's off today. We did talk to him yesterday as he was going through his 100 holes of golf at Wanaka Country Club and completed that. And Owen, as he mentioned, caddied for him for 18. And you also caddied for him the 18 holes where he had his match against
with Nate. Correct.
And you guys were streaming it. I watched a couple of minutes of it. It was the hole where he had an eagle putt for, you know, a two-shot lead or whatever.
It was to go up two. That was a big... It was the one of the best approach shots I've ever seen Jeremy hit on that hole. He hit like a 225-yard hybrid, drop and stop. Just great shot.
And I believe he ended up with 10 birdies.
Correct.
We had set the over-under at 7.5, and he cleared it. He cleared it pretty easily, too.
Yeah.
And that hole would have been one of them. Although, you know, I'm not going to lie, I was watching. The gimme range was a little... A little far there.
I don't know if it's my place to discuss the gimme protocol at the 100 holes of golf, but
that's a little more.
It may be a question to ask Jeremy on Monday. I'll say that.
Yeah, how many? Because what's the normal gimme range? Like I hear people say a club length, like a putter length.
Right.
A lot.
Inside the grip of a putter is a
grip
classic.
Of a putter. Really, is probably more of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Couple of feet.
Is that? Two and a half, 3 feet. Something like that.
I think once you get to 4 feet, typically, like I want to see that.
Yeah,
I want to see that putt. Whereas 100 holes, it's understandable. They're trying to keep up the pace, right? They're trying to finish before the sun goes down, you know. But what do they expand it to? Because it's not going to be like 15 feet,
right?
Is it
5 feet? Maybe
is it eight feet? I don't know. This birdie putt that I saw on Twitter, tough to evaluate too because it's video and how like really far it is versus how far it looks, because it looked like it was a 10-foot putt.
It was not a short putt. It was not classic gimme range.
I think he made it anyway, by the way.
He did.
This is to say that he doesn't deserve his birdie. I think he made the putt.
It was like, given already.
It was given, and then he just hit it and it went in.
He like one hand smacked it in and it went in. It was, all right, woo. But, you know, it was a generous give.
Yeah. So, again, all the fundraising season. Ride for Roswell, by the way, tomorrow. If you want to donate to that, Bulldog will be riding, leading Team WGR. You could do that at the Ride for Roswell site. So, yeah, a lot of good fundraising events obviously going on this week with 100 holes and 11-day power play and Ride for Roswell. And we're very proud to participate in all three of those to some capacity here at the station. So, and as Jeremy is saying, he texted, I said it, he made the putt. He wants everyone to know he made the putt. He did make the putt. Although it wasn't on video. I heard him in the background of the video game. I made that, by the way, or something of the sort. So, how long was the shot in? 200 something?
He was like 225 into, 225? A, par, into a par 5. Just a
cool,
real nice baby draw, like real high up.
Awesome.
One bounce and stopped. It was awesome. One of the better shots I've ever seen him in. After a bombed drive, too.
Yeah. So, it's draft day. NHL draft day, as you heard Josh in the update, we will have draft coverage starting tonight at 7 o'clock with Brayton Wilson. Paul Hamilton will be along as well. We'll have full coverage throughout the night. Draft night memories. I mean, it's kind of a non-event compared to what it used to be in terms of draft parties and when the Sabres are picking first or second, and it's a draft that's following a tank season. It's obviously very different because tonight, like, I think, you know, we won't talk much about the prospects today at all. We had Stephen Ellis on the show yesterday to do a little bit of that, but I get the sense that everybody, and this has been true probably for two, three years now at least, that everybody just wants to see them trade the pick. Not to say people be angry if tomorrow morning they've selected some 6'2" winger that Porter Martone, for instance, is one name that I've heard. They draft him. Tomorrow, you know, it'll be, oh, who is this guy? Everyone learning about what he is, and then, you know, we'll let him go play his junior hockey and we'll see you in 3 years. That's typically how it goes with these guys in the NHL draft. I think most people just want to see them trade the pick because the timeline is let's go, let's win right now. And the Sabres opened up a big need this week in their top six. But I used to really enjoy the NHL draft. Again, very different circumstances. It's easier to enjoy a draft when you have gone through a year of being in last and being either okay with them being in last or even actively rooting for them to be in last, which would have been, you know, the Eichel draft before that, the Reinhardt draft. Because that, I mean, yesterday was 10 years since draft night 2015. 10 years. How about that, by the way? It's been 10 years since all of that. And that draft night, there was an energy in that building that you won't find almost in any game now during the regular season. I'm sitting in the stands for that, and it is maybe 5 minutes, 10 minutes before the picks start rolling in, and we know what's going to happen. We know it's going to be McDavid to Edmonton, and we know the Sabres are going to pick Eichel. So there really wasn't a lot of drama to it, but there had been trade talk, and that's where that Saber team just felt like it rated, felt like it was alive. They didn't end up being good, but it felt like, I think this is maybe the last time that this was true. It felt like they existed in the league. They didn't get Mike Babcock to be the coach. They tried, and maybe they came close. Maybe they were just used for leverage and they never were had a shot. But they tried to hire the most famous number one coach that was out there on the market. They didn't get it, but they hire a Stanley Cup winning coach, chose to come here, and didn't end up being a good coach. But the pedigree that he already had, you don't see that now with this team. Guy won the Stanley Cup as like the head coach, who at the time is just coming off that team. He's not three teams removed from it. You know, you got to rate in the league a little bit to get a guy like that. And they had a general manager at the time who was slamming his foot on the gas all the time with some of those trades. And you could argue he went too far. I saw some people tweeting about the Vander Kane trade yesterday and like looking back on that. it had been 10 years and something since that deal. It's like, well, look at all the stuff they gave up. I saw that, by the way. I'm like, they really didn't end up giving up as much as you think. Sure, there was like 7 things in it. But at the end of the day, it was like a second pair defenseman and Myers and, you know.
I saw so much reaction that was like, look at this horrible deal. And you look at the,
it wasn't even that bad.
But there's not, it's quantity, not quality, really.
Drew Stafford was also in that trade.
Sure, right.
Like, I think that's probably part of it. It was just kind of an emotional Stafford part of that old core that was whatever.
So not only is 10 years ago yesterday the anniversary of that draft, but it's also of the Ryan O'Reilly trade. And all of that together was, look at what they were. They were trading for star players in the league. I'm sure they were on no trade clauses, but that was not an active part of conversations. At least I don't remember it that way. You had your Shane Doans who didn't want to come here and your Brad Richards who couldn't get a meeting with, but when they're trading for guys, like when they're trading for Ryan O'Reilly, or when they're, it's even rumored that they wanted to before that, never remember, oh, well, this guy's got a 10-team no-trade list, or this guy's got a no-movement clause, and just, I know they existed, but wasn't really a part of the conversation. It was Stanley Cup winning coach wants to go, and you're trading for good players. You know, Kane was a good player in Winnipeg. O'Reilly was a really good player in Colorado. Like, the Sabres felt like they raided a little bit. I remember arguing with people about, what they were as a destination compared to when Babcock was deciding on where to go. Like, what were they compared to Toronto? It's like, okay, yeah, smaller market, but look what they were building. But how much of that was Eichel looking back on that and the belief that he was a superstar and did end up being that, and that was really kind of the centerpiece of it all? And 10 years goes by. 10 years goes by, and the feelings that I would have had about that team then, about them raiding in the league as even a destination to some extent, at least in comparison, to now, where I just always have this feeling about this team that it feels like they aren't really in the NHL, that they don't rate at all. It's ownership, that's the building, that's, you know, I mean, Lindy is back, and we love that Lindy is back, right? But even when Lindy comes back, it's, well, you know, is that because he was the only one that would take the job that fit the description of a veteran experienced coach that they were looking for? Just it more and more, this is you know, coming up because of the Paterka trade, like 23-year-old guys that have played 2 years in the league, like, yeah, I'm good. It just gets solved with winning, right? But you always wonder about the resources that are given to the team and how much they really put into it on that front. And a lot of it, more than, you know, anything else, I feel like a lot of it is that Adams is still the general manager, which is kind of amazing that he is still the general manager. He will not walk across that stage tonight because it is a decentralized draft, but he will. Well, how will they do it? Will they announce the pick? Will Adams announce the pick, like, remotely? That's what they did during the COVID draft when they selected Owen Power. Like, it was at the concourse floor, the club level at KeyBank Center.
Right, and now they're going to be in the Bills facility. I'd imagine it'll be a Zoom situation, and they'll just bring up whatever general manager, and they'll announce the pick.
So we would think Adams is still going to make the pick, not Bettman is going to stand on.
Yeah, why not do it like the NFL does, where you have the commissioner come out and announce it, and then the next day, like tomorrow, 2 through 7, you can have like all these, you know, celebrities and people come out and do it, like,
there's
for fun.
Nobody there to boo at Bettman either, so that might be nice.
No, you know what? I don't think the GMs are going to make the pick. You want to know why? They are still having the draft at a live location.
Right, it's in L.A.,
Peacock Theater in L.A.
Right.
So,
yeah, you're probably right. They'll probably have
Is Bill Daly going to go out
and
do it?
Or Daly or somebody.
I mean, I would assume round one they'll have Bettman do it.
Right. And then it'll probably be Daly after that or whoever. And I'm
so it's
going to
look more like the NFL draft.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how it goes because it'll be an interesting – like it sounds like they're thinking about moving away from it already. So
I think that's probably right.
I think it probably is too.
That's probably right to think.
They just don't – it doesn't seem – I get why they did it. They did it because it's so fast from – Stanley Cup final ends, draft, free agency. It is really quick. And I think a couple of years ago, they all got stuck in Nashville and just everything kind of fell apart with that. And everybody was really mad and sort of hastily had this idea for let's do it online. I don't want to go do anything. And I think they'll probably regret that and immediately go back to it next year. We'll see.
Yeah. So tonight, 9 overall is the pick. And again, like the point I was leading to there is I just want to. Just want to feel like the Sabres rate in the league at all. And that will come and can come with winning. It also can come with big moves. And Paterka gone opens up a big spot. Paul's been saying more than one spot. I mean, two, I think you could even argue three spots in the top six that you'd like to fill. Half of it, really. Big moves can do that too. It can juice up the fan base. It can give you more confidence. It can get the league talking. And I know that's not necessarily automatically going to work every time to the winning part, but when Eichel got drafted and the Sabres selected Ryan O'Reilly or traded for Ryan O'Reilly the same night, that is 10 years ago yesterday, and that is the number one draft memory that I have, is sitting in that arena as all that is happening. And it felt like that night, like, all right, here we go. This team is
It felt like
onto
the start
something.
Of, you know, a new exciting era for them. And it just...
Right. And now it feels like it is heading downhill because you're in year six with the same GM. Right. Then it's the GM is still fairly new and the core is new, like the core is being built in front of your eyes. Today it's you have your core and you're still just not sure if it's near good enough.
Is it gonna work? Can they do it? It's so frustrating because you thought at that time I have the same memories. I was a little younger than you, but especially I think because I was a different age, I was so excited to watch a Sabres team that I could get excited and believe in. Because I haven't had a team since I've been an adult that I've been able to root for. Like, it's been – I was however old when they last made the playoffs. I was 10 or 12 or whatever. Yeah. I didn't have any grasp of how exciting that was and what that meant. And I probably now have an overly blown up version of how much that'll mean to me because it's been so long. And I think just where so much frustration that we see now comes is from that and from feeling like that's happening again here. And that is a dark, dark place to be. I think so many fans, we get so apathetic and then you end up just getting resentful. And that... It's not healthy. It's not what you want to root for a team for. And all you want to see is them right the ship.
Well, and I do think there's going to be more moves. We know there have to be more moves after they open up that spot in the top six. That can come tonight. And that's where I want to feel optimistic about the next week or two. I did not like the J.J. Paterka trade, but that doesn't mean that I will not like where they end up ultimately because they will make moves. And maybe they'll trade the ninth pick tonight. Maybe they'll make a different move tonight. Or they'll trade for somebody ahead of free agency. They'll do it in free agency. I want to give a couple of weeks to this team when the reporting has been they want to do something big. And so far, that has been they made another trade where the best player in the deal was their own going elsewhere. But if they want to do something big, all right, let's see it. Let's see it tonight. Let's see it this weekend. And let's see if they can get everyone to a place of hope. That's kind of what I want to get to a little bit today is how many moves are they really away from being good? Like being playoff good. Because that is something that, you know, as we break down what the roster looks like and what some of the rumors are, by the way, we have to talk about some of the things that they reportedly passed on and then how some of those reports were labeled. So we'll get to just a couple of them.
Gosh.
Get to that. Anyways, it's draft night. Jody Biasi, Jeremy Wood is off today. That's Owen Parker. You hear there, Josh Schmidt as well. 11-day power play continues. Be sure to head to 11daypowerplay.com if you want to donate. We are probably going to stretch a little bit in the break here just to keep the muscles moving a little bit. And we got plenty of time for your phone calls at 803-0550. Paul's coming up at 7, so we'll talk to Paul about tonight and potential moves the Sabres could make. And then at 9 o'clock, Brogan Houston, who covers the Mammoth out in Utah, is going to join us for a little bit more about Michael Kesselring and Josh Doan. A little more insight on those two, who both spoke yesterday as well. Jeremy and Joe, Jeremy is off today. 803-0550 is the phone number if you want to hang out here on WGR.
Buffalo selects Jack Eichel.
Surprise, surprise. McDavid, Eichel, 1-2. Listen, people who are fans of pro sports in Buffalo, they are tortured fans. Bills, Sabres. How might this young man change things in the city of Buffalo?
He can take a game over by himself because he's just so strong. He's so physical. He can be nasty if he has to be. He has played against men and thrived against men. This is not going to be a big transition for Jack Eichel.
Liam McHugh there after that pick. What was his exact phrasing? The people of Buffalo have suffered long enough.
Tortured Buffalo sports fans.
Tortured Buffalo sports fans.
This is 2 years before the drought's over.
Listen, we can't fully say that because the Bills do exist and Josh Allen has done what he's done. And they rate and they exist and they are the center of the sport in the NFL. Good morning. It's Jeremy and Joe. Jeremy's off today. It's NHL draft night, 7 o'clock tonight for the start of our coverage. You know, when thinking about the Sabres drought and like that, because that is incredible to hear. To hear that is 10 years ago talking about a Sabres selection and it's, wow, this is good news for them because, man, have they been tortured. 10 years go by. And it's basically still the exact same, if not, again, in the first segment, it's a very different feeling and vibe this draft tonight in the last couple of drafts versus that draft. I mean, that draft's tough to compete with, though, because it's not just the Eichel pick, it's the O'Reilly pick or trade. One listener tweeted in what they said on that night or what like friends and family were posting on Facebook that night. And he said his father was dancing around the room like a five-year-old at Christmas time after they traded for O'Reilly and drafted Eichel. That draft is unmatched for vibe. It was a great one. So, you know, that 10-year-old comment by Liam McHugh, my thought isn't, although one of them is, man, I can't believe how long it's been. I can't believe how long it's been for the Sabres. It really also is, I thank goodness the Bills figured it out. We used to play an open on Chopin the Bulldog with Bulldog ranting, one good team. Just give me one good team. It's a great rant. It's an all-time rant on the station. And listen, that came true. Maybe it's a curse because he only said, I just need one. And then the sports gods are like, okay, you can have one. You're only getting one, but here's one. And the Bills have been awesome. And I do think that really does make it a little easier for fans that are fans of both teams, which I think is most people. Because you do have that escape of, they trade Paterka, another one of their top players. Look. Josh Allen highlights being recommended to me on YouTube. Oh, look, every James Cook touchdown from 2024. Awesome. Oh, look, the highlights of Bills Dolphins from week 2 of last season. Click. There's a quicker sports escape for those that are maybe even just fans of the two teams. And that helps. How many moves are the Sabres away from being legitimately good, though? How many do we feel? Is it fair to say that they are close? Because I think they could make it. I think they could get a lucky goalie season. I think they could get hot scoring from a couple of guys like, of course, Tage, and Dahlin is super good. But getting lucky goaltending, are they a couple moves away?
I think so. Like, which is, you know, it always feels ridiculous to talk about, but I think they are. I like Kesselring a lot. I like Doan a lot. I don't think anybody's talking about Doan as much as I think maybe they should. He's a nice depth piece, I think, for the team. I really do think that provides an Owen Power partner for you, which will really help stabilize back there. I think this is all under the assumption that they will make the move to replace Peterka's role. That's the key to it. I think if they can do that, so that's one move, and they find some other way to improve somewhere, whether they add another depth piece on the back end or up front. I think at that point, if you get a halfway decent season out of your goaltenders, Kesselring does what you think he's going to do for you and stabilizes Power a little bit and allows him to be a little more impactful. I think this team could be really good. There's a lot of really good players on this team. Rasmus Dahlin is incredible to watch play hockey. If he played in another market, not to bring that up, but if he played somewhere on a team that was winning, he would be Norris candidate guy every year, I think. He's so smart. He kills plays. He's the perfect modern defenseman. He's skates well. He moves the puck. He's lethal in the O-zone, and he knows how to throw his weight around. And when you have a backbone like that and then another guy to support him in Power, who I know a lot of people are low on, but he's a special talent.
That combo should be as good as any combo of defensemen in the league. I think they are very good. Dahlin, I think, is great. And I think Power is very good and still growing. That is a good question. Like, can those two kind of be what jumpstarts them? Is their ascension? One day they'll make it. I think. One day they will make it. And I think I said yesterday that, like, really when that, the most likely way that happens is you get a great goalie season. Your team is pretty good, and you have, it could be Luukkonen even. You just have a great goalie season, and that carries you through. I do think another possibility is that Dahlin and Power get so good that the Sabres' blue line, it's almost too good to fail.
It's undeniable.
And that might take Power growing into his role and his body a little bit more, and maybe Kesselring will be critical to that too. But it's more so the former, the two guys that are supposed to be your elite defensemen. I mean, there's not a lot of blueprints in the NHL of playoff teams, contending teams, where their lifeblood is the back end, that they don't have the elite centers. They don't have the elite forward littered throughout the lineup. You look at almost every team that's gone into the playoffs, and especially deep into the playoffs in recent years, and almost every single one of them has got 2, 3, 4 elite forwards.
Yeah.
There's one team that really never has, and that's Carolina. Now, Carolina plays a system, and it's Brind'Amour. But when I think of Carolina from especially 3, 4 years ago, it's... Well, they just have the best blue line in the league.
Yeah, it's Slavin and Burns and just...
Well, even before that, like Justin Falk, right, even
Justin Falk
when
was
he's
awesome.
In... Like, they just... Right, they never had... Maybe Slavin should have been getting this. They didn't have a Dahlin guy that, like, oh, this guy's going to win the Norris. But they often had, like, the best defense core in hockey. They didn't have superstar forwards. They didn't have superstar goaltending. But they could just smother you, take the puck away, and control the game from back there. And that is exactly the type of potential I still feel like Power has, and we know Dahlin has.
Yeah, I think they could be a supercharged version of that. None of those defensemen were ever as good as Rasmus Dahlin is now.
No, I mean, Slavin is awesome, but not as good as Dahlin.
And he's better in his own end. He's better than anybody in his own end, to be fair.
Right.
But Dahlin brings another level of superstar, super talent to that. And I think so does Power if he can develop into his body a little bit.
Yeah.
I think a lot of Power is just filling out that frame. That's a big frame. I mean, he's a big kid, and he doesn't have a lot of weight on him, as far as we've seen so far in his NHL career. And if he can really, and that takes a lot of time. People think these are kids still. Powers, what, he's 23, 24 now? And he's going to get stronger for the next 4 years, at least. So what does he look like in 4 years?
22, by the way.
22.
But really, it's that, and it's also him having the confidence to say, I'm on the ice right now. This the pace of this game is what I decide it is.
Exactly.
That is something where, like, that's Hedman. You know? That's Hedman in Tampa. That is, I'm the best player on the ice. I'm controlling this play. I'm getting it out of our zone, and I'm going to set up. Like, that is, to me, what he would be at his best. And I think he's been very good, but he's not quite at that point where he is dominating. He's dominating in that way. Paul in Buffalo, if you hang on hold, we'll get you right when we come back on kind of the Sabres blueprint here, how much that could change tonight, whether they're a move or two away from being legitimately good or if they are farther than that. Because I think there would probably be many that would say, no, they can't just make one good trade and be a playoff team. But maybe if the trade was good enough. We'll get to Paul, and then we'll get to Paul Hamilton coming up at 7 o'clock. So still time for your phone calls here on Jeremy and Joe here on WGR. Get to Paul in Buffalo here. Quick phone call. There's also a story from Prague in Czechia, which is where David Pastrnak is from. There is some story from a paper there about the Florida Panthers pushing all in to trade for David Pastrnak this summer, which, you know, we get these stories from overseas from time to time. If anything like that were to happen, then I think we have to call the Panthers a super team. We were talking about that in the break, though. I don't know what they would have. Like, it would have to be Anton Lundell to start, but, like, they don't have any picks. So, Florida. I don't think it'll happen. Boston's not going to trade Pastrnak. He's, like, their only good forward. Anyways, 803-0550, the phone number on the Sabres. Paul in Buffalo is next up. What's up, Paul?
Good morning, Joe. I think you guys were right on point before you went to commercial there. For us to be great, it has to start with our two number one picks. And, I mean, you've heard many of my calls over the years. I have really yet to ever call about Owen Power. And maybe once or twice I've mentioned him. He's just too young, and the position is too hard to learn to start criticizing him. This coming season is, I really think, when callers have the right to start criticizing Owen Power. When you're that tall and that thin, it takes time to get into your body. And when you're playing a position like NHL defense that takes, you know, no one is in their prime as an NHL defenseman before 25, unless you're named Dahlin or Makar. It's very, very rare. So people need to lay off Owen Power. I think when he is 25 years old, he is going to be an all-star every year for 10 years running. Maybe I'll be wrong about that, but if he's healthy at 25, he's going to be great. Moving on to the trade. The grade is incomplete, but I think it's halfway to something really smart. Now, I've never been as high on Peterka as others. I think he disappears when times are tough, and I think he eats up backup goalies in meaningless games. But what we got back was a right shot defenseman who can play defense, is entering his age 25 season. He's going to have his best years right now. And, you know, we got back someone who could be a punching bag, could be more. Who cares about that? But we now have a flood of defensemen, and Bowen Byram needs to go. And he's going to go in a package with the ninth overall pick and any prospect we have. Let's just say Konsta Hellenius. And for those three assets, let's just pretend we got Elias Pettersson back. That is a better hockey team. taking out Bowen Byram and J.J. Paterka and bringing back Elias Pettersson and Michael Kesselring. That is a better hockey team by a country mile, in my opinion. And if that is what's done, or a forward of Pettersson's caliber, which is no one would even debate, not a top six, a top three forward, that's a better hockey team. So if Kevyn Adams can manage that, I'll be a happy camper, and I would certainly buy a few tickets, I think. Guys, have a good show. Have a nice day.
Thanks, Paul, for the call. That's a big lift to get a player of that caliber when Bo Byram is your centerpiece. It depends. How does another team view him? Because if I could see a smart team looking at some of his numbers and going, oh, he's a Darlene Merchant. And I'm not giving you my number one center for him. If you want to pair him with, you know, but that's the thing. It originally, like the Pettersson idea, it was Cousins and Byram. And then it was, well, maybe Paterka and Byram. I guess they were interested in Josh Norris at the deadline. We want to make a Norris and Byram now? But I understand it. But it's a big lift. It's a huge lift to bring back a forward of that caliber. The Buffalo Sabres have not acquired a forward of that caliber since the trade 10 years ago that we were just talking about, O'Reilly. Right? It's been a decade. So, but I'm with you. If they find a way to do it, then you'll pair the two trades together and it'll look pretty good. And by the way, one other quick thing on Paterka before we hit a break and go to we'll get Paul Hamilton in on this. Paterka, I did see yesterday, Brian Mazurowski from down the hall at WBEN's been pointing this out a lot lately, that Paterka scored like one goal, two goals, something really low during the 13-game losing streak. Four goals? That's a little better. But still. B-Maz says it was three. Three during the 13, but whatever. If you look at his splits, Paterka's, he did... The Sabres have this reputation of as soon as the pressure is off in March and April, that's when they start to play well. And if you actually look at it, it's not fully true. Like, it's a little true, but it's not really that. I think it's a little bit overstated. But when you look at Paterka's goal totals in the last few years, his goal total does go up a lot in March and April. It's like non-existent in December, but March and April, there's a lot of goals. And listen, if you are one of those people that every time we get to that point in the season, you're saying to your friends or Twitter, oh, pressure's off, late in the season, this is when the Sabres start winning, then you should be the person that believes that they were right to trade Paterka. Because he stacked up a lot of goals in those games. Anyways, Paul Hamilton, when we come back, take more of your phone calls as well. It is draft night. Sabres at the moment are slated to pick number 9 overall. Our draft coverage starts tonight at 7 o'clock. We'll reminisce with Paul. We'll look ahead, trades, draft picks, all coming up here on WGR.